With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode brought to you by Yahoo Sports Canada. My name is Iman, and I am joined by the man himself, Amit Man. How are you?
Is that a pun?
I was trying something. It's Iman, Amit Man. Like, there's just, there's something there.
Yeah.
Okay. The question is,
yeah, I'm all right. You know, I found that with the Toronto Raptors throughout the whole season, my coffee is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. And now I'm at an XL. I think I started at a medium and now we're at XL. So that kind of tells a story of the Toronto Raptors season.
Yeah, you're Islamophobic for playing this poorly in Ramadan because I can't drink coffee, guys. What are you doing to me?
I'm so sorry.
not you. I'm talking to the Raptors. No, not you. I worked at a restaurant during Ramadan. I'm totally fine with it.
The fella at concierge, he's a really nice guy. And the other day we asked him, do you want a coffee? He's like, oh, no, it's Ramadan. We're just like, oh, geez, we're so sorry. Sorry. And we don't,
It's fine. I'm sure you did not offend him at all. I literally have been up since like 5 o'clock in the morning. I've had my coffee today. Okay. So let's talk about the game that was last night. So the Raptors lost, unfortunately, because that game, it was one of the most important games. Every game so is going to be one of the most important, except these final three kind of feel a little bit useless because they lost to the Boston Celtics. Now the Boston Celtics were without Jason Tatum, without Marcus Smart, and without Al Horford in a must-win game for the Raptors to try and
respect
get up
to that. Respect Peyton Pritchard, right? He's been the killer this whole season. But
also without Peyton Pritchard, their best three-point shooter whenever they play the Toronto Raptors. And the Raptors still managed to lose that one. What were your thoughts? What are your big takeaways from one of the biggest losses of the season?
Ooh, to the date, but there's still Friday and Sunday. So, I mean,
it doesn't matter. Those games don't matter because they're not falling down to 10th and they're not moving up to 8th.
That's true. There was still the possibility that they could have ended up in the 8th spot. And that would have been terrific for a variety of reasons. But yes, the Celtics game, it comes down to the final three quarters. The Raptors gave up 66 points. Not bad defense. Same time, OG and Fred, they combined for, I believe, 2 for 20 from three. And Gary, obviously, just coming back from injury, but he was 0 of 2, only played 15 minutes, out of rhythm, so that's all that. But those three together, those are your core three-point shooters, which is another problem. Why do you only have three core three-point shooters? But when those guys struggle, the Raptors struggle. They played hard. They tried. They were clearly tired. Their legs were screaming uncle. All that was happening. Pascal was terrific. But in the end, you shoot 16% from three, 19%, whatever the case is, you get very little production from your backcourt, and the other team has the exact opposite with Brogdon. You know, he is an all-star, former all-star. He has that potential. He has that ability to go off for 27 Raptors points, killer. Just like he did. Yeah. And it's funny that he could have been a Raptor this season, but he decided to take the Boston contract. That's fine. It is what it is, but it still hurts.
Probably the right decision for him. Probably the right decision for him. Yeah. Here's my thing about that game entirely. You're exactly right. Sometimes it just comes down to making and missing shots. It's not like the Celtics shot particularly well. They only shot 28% from three. But I think the story of the Raptors is even when a team shoots poorly against you, the Raptors can always shoot worse. that's where we are with this team. And we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but that's what sort of scares me about any sort of play-in scenario. But focusing in on this game, honestly, one of my biggest takeaways was, what on earth were the rotations that the Raptors threw out last night? I'm usually not one, especially in a game where a team shoots poorly, to go and look at the rotations and be like this, that, and the third. But I thought last night's was so... It was odd that second quarter when the bench was all in. And Nick Nurse said after the game that, you know, he was waiting for some sort of game stoppage. But when that doesn't come, you call a timeout. And he did eventually, but it just took too long and the bleeding was nonstop. You needed Pascal Siakam in there. Also, I thought, like, Pascal only played 35 minutes. There were also a stretch in the fourth quarter where you needed him to play. This is a must-win game. This was a winnable game down the stretch, and you didn't have him in there. And also, you did not have Jakob Poeltl in there. And that, to me, didn't make any sense, especially for a team that is shooting as poorly as it does. One of your most effective forms of offense is just a Jakob Poeltl in the pick and roll, and he was doing a fairly good job of it as well. Like, it was frustrating to watch this team make mistakes upon mistakes. There was a stretch in the third quarter where Blake Griffin was the only five in. He was the biggest guy, and I saw the Raptors take a bunch of jump shots instead of drive in. There were moments where Koloko came into the game, and that was an absolutely brutal stretch. I know plus minus is kind of a weak stat to use, but when you have Jakob Poeltl play, and when you have Christian Koloko playing like 5.5 minutes and being a minus 10, and you have Jakob Poeltl playing 22 minutes and being a plus 10, that matters in this game.
Sure.
And to me, it was like the rotations were questionable. Yes, guys were missing their shots, but even with that, this was a winnable game if you just didn't have an entire bench lineup out there absolutely bleeding. And if you didn't have Christian Koloko there down the stretch. And also, yeah, Precious played great, but guess what you can do? You can play Precious alongside Jakob Poeltl. You needed the size. You were getting killed on the glass in the final minutes of the game. You could have had that. And I did not understand the decisions there, considering nothing was working except for Jakob Poeltl. And that's what they decided to move away from. Pascal Siakam was also phenomenal and deserves his roses for that game. But I just thought that was frustrating because it mattered so much to win that, because the Atlanta Hawks ended up beating the Washington Wizards. And to your point, the Raptors can still catch up and be the eighth seed if they win out and the Hawks lose out. But that seems highly unlikely at this point. So it seems like the Raptors are sort of locked into the ninth spot because, I don't know, Jakob Poeltl needed to rest and Christian Koloko somehow needed to play. I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah.
Just so everyone knows, the Atlanta Hawks, they play the 76ers at home and then they're on the road against the Boston Celtics. So two games they could lose, right? It's not impossible, but I mean, give them credit. They've been winning games.
Yeah.
They're getting the job done. They beat the Bulls on the road last night or two nights ago Trae Young.
Yeah.
That's getting it done. And I didn't even watch the game, but the fact that it happened, the Bulls are in this stretch too. We're going to talk about it, that the Raptors and Bulls are both underachieving at a pretty critical point of the season. So give them credit. But for the Raptors now, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I wondered when that was happening with Jakob Poeltl and the Precious Achiuwa thing, is that was Nick thinking, okay, so our offense is laboring. Do we just need more space? Because Precious had hit a couple of threes, I believe, and that way he can get a little more five out. And he was a presence in his own way. But at the same time, I hear what you're saying. Like that bench lineup in the second quarter, when it became clear that it wasn't going well and the game was just getting away from you, you could tell that the Raptors were really laboring offensively. Legs weren't there from the get-go. Granted, the Celtics also played last night, but different dynamics in terms of minutes between those two teams. So maybe you pull the hook a little bit earlier than maybe you want to. And I even say, like, but Pascal Siakam
spot 35 minutes together.
But 35 minutes of Pascal, he was gassed at the end of the third quarter. Yeah. Like, he put so much time and energy into that quarter to get the Raptors back in contention to win that game. And so he needed a break too. But even then, he came in pretty early in the fourth quarter, or actually had like a 2 minute stretch. And then he had a bit of that in there, but I mean, it's hard to say with the Toronto Raptors, and I think Jeff Doughton Jr. could have helped yesterday too, to be honest. Malcolm Brogdon.
Let's pivot to Jeff Doughton Jr. because I think you look at that game for the Raptors and you mentioned it. Gary Trent Jr. went like 0 for 5 on the night. Fred VanVleet 1 for 12 from deep. Like, your guards were not doing what you needed them to do, and someone who's come in as your backup guard has been Jeff Doughton Jr. The Raptors very well could have used him last night, but of course he was not allowed to play because he's already played 50 games for this team. And so the Raptors have a major decision that they will be making later on today. So when you hear this, this might be dated, but I want to throw it to you, Amit. What do you think the Raptors should do with Jeff?
I mean, they think they should keep him. Like, if you're truly intending to try and win as many games as you can this season, if you want to get through the play-in, make some kind of noise in the playoffs, and maybe that's not even the goal. Maybe you just want to get to the playoffs to give your guys reps. That could very well be the case. But then probably Malachi Flynn and Delano Banter should be playing, right? If that's where we're going, then do that. But like, you're balancing, let's try to win, but let's not really try to win. They're going back and forth. And I mean, I don't know. Jeff Doughton, like, he's clearly an NBA caliber backup point guard. He offers things that not all point guards can do. He's a bit of a combo guard in a way with his defensive ability. He can clearly run a team. He's good an size. Asset.
Yeah. Yeah, good size. 6'3", as well.
6'4", right?
Here's my thing. I was on Raptor Queens about a month ago, and we were talking about Jeff Doughton Jr., and I said that I didn't think that the Raptors were going to keep him beyond the sort of, well, around this time. And they still can, even if they do not make a decision today. They can still extend, you know, the two-way qualifying offer this summer, make him a restricted free agent, and match any offer. So there's still the possibility in the future. But my biggest thing is, like, if Jeff Doughton Jr. was 22, I think the Raptors would, without a doubt, be keeping him. But the fact of the matter is,
I hate this conversation.
I'm with you on, like, it, but, like, you look at this Raptors team, Jeff Down Jr. is older than OG Anunoby. So when we're talking about, like, developing guys, he's going to be 26 sometime during the playoffs, right? Mm. So that to me is why I thought, if the Raptors were to make a decision, because in order to keep Jeff Down Jr., it's not a matter of just giving him the money. In order to keep him, you have to waive someone on your roster. And to me, the decision to bring in Joe Wieskamp, who I believe is like 22, to me was a decision that like, this is the person that they, because like, why would you get him when you know you have to make the decision with Jeff Doughton Jr. a lot coming soon? Like, they knew what they were doing at the trade deadline when they picked Joe Wieskamp up. So it's like, you knew what you were doing there. So to me, I always felt like maybe the age is something, and it sucks that that's a part of the conversation. I think if there's one team that knows that, like, you can develop at any age, it should be the Toronto Raptors. But I also think bringing along a Will Barton kind of signifies that as well, because I think, to your point, if you want to win games, you need to have Jeff Doughton Jr. But once the play-in and playoffs come around, if the playoffs do come around, he's what, your 10th, 11th guy at best? He's not for seeing the court. So you're looking at Jeff Doughton Jr. as something for next year. So it is something that they can, if they decide that, like, yes, he actually is someone that I want to keep around for next year, that is a decision they can make in the summertime. I just don't know that that's a decision that they'll make today. I'd be surprised, because, like, they're not waiving Delano Banton. They're not waiving Malachi. Like, they're not waiving they're not waiving Will Barton. They're just like, can they? I don't even know if that's legal. I don't know what they, like, I'm not, like, they're not waiving Thaddeus Young. They're not waiving any of these guys. And so it's like, what is a decision that you're making? I don't think you waive Joe Wieskamp if you just got him. So to me, I think that the decision that the Raptors make is probably in the future for a guy like Jeff Doughton Jr. And to your point, Nick Nurse does love to play him. And that brings up a whole conversation of, do the Raptors care what Nick Nurse and the coaching staff want? Because will he be here this summer? Or do they find another guy who maybe is indifferent towards a guy like Jeff Doughton? It's just completely up in the air right now for the Raptors. Yeah. So it sucks. I hope they keep him. He's been good. And, you know, the Raptors should try to reward their good players. But, like, it does not surprise me that someone who will be 26 sometime in May is not what the Raptors want to use their bench to develop.
Yeah.
Don't shoot the messenger. I'm just...
No, and I hear what you're saying. I mean, I'm curious, like, you know, with Gary Trent Jr. going out, then Will Barton sprained his ankle. And then at that point, with everything we're talking about, I guess it is just like, let's try to keep on winning games. But then why didn't you play Malachi Flynn? Right. Again, valuable reps for Malachi Flynn to get some, like, steady minutes as a backup point guard on the Toronto Raptors, playing with some of their best players. That matters. Again, it's another development thing. But they decided, no, we're going to play Jeff because we know he can help us win games. Okay, cool. So
are the coaching staff and front office, do we believe that they're sort of?
Well, I mean, that's probably a great question. It's very unclear. With Nick Nurse's comments that he said recently about his future, and, you know, 10 years is a long, good time to reflect, like, okay, sir, you're under contract. At the same time, though, I would imagine for any coach who is going into a contract year, that it's just poor business to do that to a coach, to put them on that kind of leash. So that's why most coaches are extended, or you move on from the coach, right? Because this is poor business. It's not a great look. It's not the same kind of dynamics between a player and a coach going into a contract year. You have to solidify that. And if you truly do believe that Nick Nurse is part of your future, and me personally, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm curious what players think about Nick Nurse, because as we have all talked about, something weird has gone on this season, and I want to know what it is. Is it Nick Nurse? Is it the players? Is it a player coach versus GM kind of dynamic, that kind of a thing, because they're like, hey, we need a starting center. It's been a couple of years. We could really help. And they've actually been a lot better, obviously, with Jakob Poeltl. It's solidified a lot of things. And also, hey, we still need three-point shooting. So as a Nick Nurse, you might say, you give me these things and now we're cooking. But to me, from what I understand, is that management, and this is, I'm including Nick Nurse in here, is that this has been a part of their development. They want to develop these players to become, you know, a rim protector, a Precious Achiuwa, right? Like, obviously, there's some limitations with his size, but you want him to be able to be that kind of backup center role, but also be able to guard on the perimeter. You want Precious to be able to hit threes. You want OG to get more reps. You do all these things because you want encourage development between your solidified core within your franchise. So if you fire Nick Nurse now, I'd be like, well, you didn't give me the pieces. And now you're judging me based off of this? That's not fair.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wrote something similar for Yahoo about the players. And I think to your point, that is exactly what I would say for Nick Nurse. It's kind of, you know, I talked about how the Raptors gave DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry every opportunity. They were like, you guys need more three-point shooting. We're going to bring in a 3-and-D guy. You guys actually need a stretch four. We'll bring that in. They kept 100%. Trying different pieces until DeMar DeRozan proved that, like, hey, it still doesn't work in 2018. And then they moved on from DeMar, and they also moved on from Dwayne Casey. It was a similar thing. Hey, Dwayne Casey, you need, you know, Damari Carroll, you need a PJ Tucker, you need a Serge Ibaka. We're going to bring these guys in. And if it still doesn't work, then we're moving past you. And I thought that the Raptors did not give a fair chance to this core. And to that point, they didn't give it a fair chance to Nick Nurse either, because one in the same when you're looking at it that way. But to your point, if there is some drama behind the scenes that we're just not privy to, who knows? And I feel like Nick Nurse's comments were just, that sort of threw me all out of whack a little bit. And definitely, it'll be really interesting to see what the Raptors do this summer, because not only do they have Nick Nurse's contract, but they also have three players who will be non-restricted free agents and possibly a restricted free agent in Jeff Doughton Jr. there as well. So it'll be...
Say his name.
Oh, yeah, yay.
I just hope for Jeff, I really hope he lands. Going into next season, I don't think it's fair. I mean, there's so many careers that, you know, from the conversation I've had with CJ about this stuff, like, there are so many players that just don't become NBA players simply because of opportunity. And when I talked to Jeff about this, he kind of said that, like, it's not me. He didn't say it directly. He's like, but he's essentially saying that I just need an opportunity.
Yeah.
And then I'll be able to make the most of it. And he has done that with the Toronto Raptors. And I just, I feel for him. I hope he lands, because he seems like a really honest, nice guy. What? Yeah,
me too. I hope I'm wrong about
like, you have Delano Bant, you have Malachi Flynn. You can't have Jeff Doughton Jr. as well going into next season. And maybe that's where
the decision is made. 3 years older than all of them. I think he's like 3 or 4 years older than all of them.
The average NBA career is 6 years. He's going to be good for six more years. Yeah. Yeah.
It sucks that that's what it comes down to. But like, as soon as I found out he was older than OG Anunoby, I was like, oof. that's not what the Raptors have tended to use the back end of the roster for. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the bad, which is the Celtics game, about the questions that are up in the future, which is the summer. But before we get into all of that, I think what's going to answer some of those questions are what happens in the play-in. And there's been some good here as well. The Raptors have actually been the best team of the play-in bunch, if you look at the numbers. They've been the best defense of the play-in group since the All-Star break. They also have the best net rating. They have the sixth best net rating since February 28th, and I have that date. In particular, I didn't like pick that date to find where they were the fifth best or sixth best net rating, but it's right up there. It's ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks in that time span, right? Like right below the Kings. They've been a legitimately good team. And the reason why I selected February 28th as, you know, the date that I'm pulling all my stats from is because that was a day that the Raptors played the Chicago Bulls and won. And so all the stats that I'm looking from from that last game. And the reason why focused on the Chicago Bulls is because where it stands right now, unless things go totally out of whack in the final few games of the season, the Raptors will be playing and will be hosting the Chicago Bulls. And so those numbers have been really, really interesting to me. So I want to sort of ask you first, if you had your choice, would Chicago have been the team that you wanted to see of the play-in bunch?
Yeah, probably they're up there. The team that I don't want to face. And mind you, I think the Raptors can and should beat any of the play-in teams. But the Atlanta Hawks are the team that scare me the most. Because, I mean, we know, like, you know, in one-game dynamics, who's your star? Exactly. Trae Young's a problem. They've had issues containing him before, but the last time they played, like, OG wasn't there. But then you got Bogdanovich, and then you got, you know, DeJounte Murray. These kinds of, like, quick guards have just caused the Raptors issues. They can deal probably better with a person like DeMar DeRozan, a slower pace, a pick-and-roll ball handler kind of player. He's fifth in total possessions as a pick-and-roll ball handler, and also he's second in points as a ball handler. So that is their bread and butter, and the Raptors can switch. They can do a lot of different things. They can throw different kind of looks at DeMar, and that's obviously going to be beneficial for them. They beat them the last time around, and going back and looking at that game, Vucevic was a problem, but, I mean, that's kind of it. It's a pick and roll between Vucevic and DeMar. And then, you know, Vucevic pops and he hits threes sometimes, and you just hope that he doesn't hit that many threes. But outside of that, I mean, like, the Raptors, they played a decent game. Scotty Barnes missed, like, I counted 11 to 55 chip shots. And that's just sort of happens, but you want to bank that won't happen again. And we're also in the early stages of this Jakob Poeltl integration to the lineup. There are several occasions when I was looking back at the footage that I believe they would have made that pass, or it would have been a much smoother possession here and there. And so from a size standpoint, the Raptors definitely have an advantage. And I think they just have more, more overall talent to succeed against the Bulls. But then again, you got Zach LaVine. He could put up 55 on any given day, and he's kind of scary too.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, like, looking at the games that the Raptors played against the.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bulls, there were the ones early on in the season that happened in November. Pascal Siakam gone, the Raptors win one. They lose the other because Zach LaVine, I think, missed the one that the Raptors won. Zach LaVine came back for the one that the Raptors lost, but of course they didn't have Pascal Siakam. They also did not have Jakob Poeltl, and the Bulls did not have Patrick Beverley. Now, the last game, the game that happened on February 28th, that's the game that I sort of focused in on. That was a close game between the two, and Scotty Barnes just had an absolute monstrous fourth quarter against them. He was blocking every single shot. And so, to your point, the Raptors are just bigger than them. And to your other point, they play at a much slower pace, right? Like, the Hawks play at a really quick pace. The Miami Heat, the Toronto Raptors, and the Chicago Bulls all play at extremely slow paces. And I think that that sort of bodes well for the Toronto Raptors in this matchup. They also have done really well at containing both Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. What they do is they just help off of Pat Bev and Alex Caruso. So it's easy. It's like, it's pretty simple. I do think that the Bulls do have a counter there with, you know, Patrick Williams. Like, that's someone who didn't get a lot of time, I thought, in that game that the Raptors played against them. He's someone who, very similar to the Raptors, I feel like he'd fit in perfectly here in terms of his size, but also in the fact that he's incredibly inconsistent and you never know what you're going to get from him on any given night. He could be the best player or the worst player you've ever seen in your life. So I just, to me, this is an interesting matchup. The Bulls have actually, outside of the Raptors, have been playing the best out of all of the play-in teams. The Miami Heat have the worst net rating. Of course, Jimmy has missed some time there, but, like, also, I don't want to face the Miami Heat because, like, I feel like someone's going to get incredibly injured on the court and Jimmy Butler's also just going to go off and there's no way that you can contain him.
Yeah.
But something I found, so to me, the Chicago Bulls, it's tough. It's tough because I think the Raptors can lose to any of these teams, but I think they should beat them. Right? Like, I think that they, because it really comes down to just shooting variance. When it's a single game elimination, if it was 2019 and you have the championship team having a single game elimination against the Orlando Magic, the Raptors would have lost in the first round and not gone on to win a championship, because single game eliminations can mean DJ Augustine hits a game winner against you and you're out of here, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it just comes down to shot making. And as we saw last night with the Toronto Raptors team, I just cannot bet on their shot making.
Yeah.
I think what sort of bodes well for the Raptors is that if you look at the worst three-point shooting teams right now, it's been the and in terms of three-point frequency, in terms of three-point percentage, like their shots that are three-pointers, it is the Toronto Raptors, Miami Heat, and the Atlanta Hawks all in the bottom five of the NBA. They're all in the bottom five of the NBA post-All-Star break. So if you're looking at a team, if you're looking at a team that, like, if it comes down to shooting variance, hey, if the Raptors don't make them, Atlanta, Miami, and Chicago also have not proven to be able to make them either. So that maybe bodes well for you. I think what is really interesting to me about the Raptors versus Bulls matchup is the fact that, like, you know, Vooch is going to go off, and I think you're fine with Vooch going off if you're the Toronto Raptors, because for one, Vooch is not a guy who can create his own shot. So, like, feed him the ball, whatever, he's fine. It's DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, and if you have guys who can contain them, I think you're golden there. But that just requires Pat Bev and Alex Caruso to have bad games, bad shooting nights, I should say. They're going to be, you know, their pesky selves on defense. But if they have bad shooting nights, I think the Raptors can come and feel fairly comfortable in this matchup here. They've got the size, they've got the rebounding, they have been a better defense. I know the league story has been the Chicago Bulls defense. The Raptors have been a better defense for since the All-Star break, when everybody's been talking about the Bulls defense. So I'm looking at this matchup and I'm like, on paper, the Raptors should beat them, but still I have zero faith in the Raptors beating them, because watch Alex Caruso just have the game of his life.
And like you said, single game elimination, you don't know what could happen. Containing Andre Drummond in his like 16 minutes or so will be pretty crucial as well. The last time they played, he had 6 and 10 in 16 minutes. So you put Yak in there, I would hope, because you know that Precious, Ascotti, they can guard Vucevic. And so you can do some interesting substitutions there. Then also Derek Jones Jr., he's now in the rotation. So that's additional that's length that could, so that could be additional length that Ascotti and OG Pascal may have to deal with. But in the end, like, all three of those players, there are so many mismatches that they can attack. And then also, you know, the Raptors, like, they kind of decide how they want to play. And it's like, okay, so we have a drop big, cool. Fred and Yak, pick and roll, you do your thing. But then they also have another style that if you're small, we can do this. They can do both of those options against the Chicago Bulls. And so you would think that it's going to be, it presents a good matchup. And also last time they played, I mean, Vucevic had 6 turnovers, right? And they had like 20 turnovers overall. And they got, the Raptors had 23 more shots. They rebounded them. Like, the formula was there for them to win that game, despite it only being like a 6-point game. They perform better offensively. This is a recording. Things should be fine. But I mean, also, you get a little bit worried about these single game eliminations when you have a player like DeMar on one side and Zach LaVine, just because of their scoring prowess and how talented they are. But I think in a game like that, you are hoping that, you know, Pascal Siakam, he's able to cancel out the production of DeMar DeRozan. Like, it's what you want from your star player, your best player. Then after that happens, then you're probably in a decent spot just to overall beat the Chicago Bulls. But again, one game elimination, who the hell knows?
Yeah, DeMar's struggled against the Raptors. I think he's only averaged 14 points against them this year. Yeah. That last game, he had 11 points on 13, or he had 13 points on 11 shots, and he got to the line like 5 times. Like,
he's a point guard for them.
Yeah, and sometimes he's a power forward for them. And that's sort of the thing. Or Alex Caruso is a power forward for them. And that's kind of the thing with the Bulls, is like, the Raptors should have more size. And I think your point about Andre Drummond is a really good one there, because what the Raptors did in the fourth quarter to completely turn it around and steal that game against Chicago, although they kind of had control for most of it, was they went small, right? Because Andre Drummond was not in there. And so they did not need Jakob Poeltl, and they just went with Scotty at the five. And we know that Scotty at the five is a phenomenal player, right? Like, that was a game where OG missed a free throw and Scotty got the rebound and dunked it right back in. Like, it was beautiful. Mm. It was the high energy. And I think why I'm sort of excited about a play-in scenario is because I think we've seen the best Scotty on nationally televised games. We see the best Scotty when the lights are brightest. Like, he is a true star in the making, because when the lights shine bright, I mean, in his first playoff game, he almost had a triple-double before getting hurt. So, like, when the lights are brightest, Scotty really does show up. But a lot of this is going to come down to OG, Fred, being able to knock down their shots. To your point, the Raptors only have a couple of three-point shooters. Gary Trent Jr. being able to knock down their shots. But going back to that last game against them, Those guys did not hit their shots except for Gary Trent Jr. It seems like when you're going up against a bad three-point shooting team, you only need one guy to be able to do it. And it was Gary who did it for the Raptors. So hopefully one of those three guys, if not two of them, can come out against the Chicago Bulls. And I think that that can completely change it. But my last point about the difference between a playoffs and play-in is in the playoffs, I trust the Raptors to be able to beat this team because I trust that the Raptors are a better team than the Chicago Bulls. They've proven to be a better team than the Chicago Bulls. In a single game elimination, it comes down to who has the best shot maker sometimes. And I trust that the Bulls have better shot makers than the Toronto Raptors because they have DeMar DeRozan and they have Zach LaVine. Now, the Raptors have really been able to contain them. And so hopefully that continues through. The Raptors just need to play defense at the way that they play. I think if the Raptors come out with their defensive intensity and we see how good they can be when games matter and when the lights are brightest, we know how good their defense can be. I think the Raptors should be able to beat the Bulls, but I would never pick them outright. I'm waiting a little bit. I'm probably going to do my reverse jinx and pick the Chicago Bulls. Who knows?
It's worked before. It's worked.
It has. It has. And so, like, the Philadelphia 76ers be very scared because I've been very high on you guys all year.
You got the Drake effect. Nicely done.
I'm trying my best. I'm trying my best to use it for the Raptors' good. I don't think Drake has done that very well.
Yeah. Maybe Will Barton hits four threes. You know, he had six against whoever it was, Charlotte, and then he had zero on one attempt and 4 minutes against the. No, what? That was a different game. Whatever, he didn't play much yesterday.
He didn't play. I think he was 0-2 last night. But you know who's been spectacular outside of yesterday's game? It's OG Anunoby. OG Anunoby has been phenomenal. So maybe it's not Will Barton hitting those shots. Maybe it's OG. Maybe he's coming to prove that he's truly the Raptors' number two option. I don't know what I'm saying here, but I wanted to throw this conversation. I want to close off on OG Anunoby because I feel like we've been really down.
Positive.
And I think
if there's
been a bright spot, it has been Mr. I don't shoot trying to miss because he really has not been missing any of his shots recently. OG Anunoby is shooting like near 46% from deep in the last month of basketball, which is just absolutely absurd. What are your thoughts on OG Anunoby and his recent play?
You know, this conversation is interesting because I was going to do a video on OG Anunoby just on the transition that's happened for him. And the date I was going to start with was February 28th.
That's all of my stats. There we go.
Yeah, that's when the switch happened. So in non-restricted area paint shots, okay, he is up 11% since February 28th. Long mid-range, he is in the 100th percentile at his position since February 28th.
That's ridiculous.
From 16 to 24 feet.
Okay.
One more for you. Okay. You're going to see a trend here. From 16 to 24 feet. Since February 28th, he is shooting 76.9%. Now, there isn't a huge volume here, but when he takes the shots, they're very good. And then obviously, you know, since March 15, his corner three-point shooting has been very good. But since March 15th, he is at least 5 to 10% better from each corner and 7% better above the break. So his shooting has been ridiculous. And that's where it's coming down to. His shooting has been very good. And it's not even around the rim. It's just he's executing the shots that are within the scope of his offense. The long mid ranges, those are great shots to take if you can make them. And now he's hitting them. Not on a high volume, but when he does do it, it's with purpose. He's on balance. He's poised. He's confident. The awkwardness, I think, is kind of going away. There's a rhythm to what he's doing, which is massive to his potential. So those are great signs for him.
I mean, you hit it. And it's funny because I was like, it's so funny that February 20, I didn't even know that that was a date. I was just, you know, focused really in on February 28th and his numbers just absolutely blew me away looking through them. Number one, like outside of it, just looking at the season as a whole, OG Anunoby is third in made corner threes, just behind Reggie Bullock and Mikal Bridges. And as I was playing around with those numbers, you mentioned it there, the above the break threes since February 28th has been absolutely absurd. He's shooting them now. Granted, not on a high volume, but he's shooting them out there like he's Steph Curry. Like, what do you mean you're shooting over 40% above the break? That is absolutely absurd. And here's the thing. Like, I think a large part of like OG Anunoby's three-point diet, as I mentioned, he's third in corner threes, has just been in the corners. But now OG being able to hit those catch and shoot threes from anywhere completely changes the space that the offense plays with, right? Like, to be a good three-point shooter, yeah, you need to hit them in the corner. We want Precious to do that. We want Pascal to do that when they're out there. But to be a good three-point shooter, to be a true floor spacer, you need to be able to hit them above the break. You need to be able to hit them on the wings. You need to be able to space it out. And we're seeing OG Anunoby do that. And also, I was playing around with some of the numbers because OG's post-up numbers were actually pretty bad. I mean, how many times do we see OG? And you said he looks a lot more fluid. How many times do we see OG try to post a guy up and it's a charge and it's a turnover? It seemed like it was pretty high. He also didn't score a ton. He would have to sort of pass it out because he couldn't find anything there, or it'd be a turnover. Since February 28th, his efficiency is the same as Pascal Siakam's there. Granted, not on the same, not on the same volume, but he has been so incredibly efficient. He's also not turning it over a ton. He looks a lot more fluid with the basketball, and like, that is exciting for what he is, because, you know, and we talked a little bit about Jeff Doughton Jr. and how, like, I didn't know if the Raptors were going to use a back of the end, you know, back of the bench roster spot on him, because they don't tend to, you know, focus on developing 25, 26 year olds at the back, you know, at the end of the roster. They do it on the Precious Achiuwas and the Gary Trent Jr. is the guy that the guys that are in their early 20s. But I think OG Anunoby is a prime example that, like, 25 year olds are still developing. Like, 20 near 26 year olds are still developing. They're still taking another step. Not saying Jeff Doughton Jr. is OG Anunoby, but I think the growth that we're seeing from OG Anunoby, the fluidity with which he plays, the mid-range shots which he's knocking down that he was not doing early on in the season, you're getting OG to ISO a little bit more. I wasn't able to filter ISOs by date, so I wasn't able to get a clear sort of number of like what that sort of looks like. I'm hoping to go and clean the glass and doing a deeper dive on that. But OG Anunoby has just been spectacular in the last month and a bit, and he's exactly what the Raptors have needed. And Pascal's looking spectacular too. Fred VanVleet, he had an off night, that thumb. I hope that that's coming along, because like, if his thumb is really done, because we saw what sort of the difference of Fred VanVleet having a good thumb and a bad thumb is, if he's really hurt, it's going to be pretty dicey for the Raptors. But we're starting to see it really come together, and Scottie Barnes really stepping up. I think, you know, one thing that we talked about a lot in that February 28th Chicago Bulls game was Scottie having a pretty bad first three quarters and really coming out hard in the fourth quarter, how he's able to sort of push everything back. And that's something that we saw yesterday as well. He came out really hard against the Celtics after having a bad game against the Hornets. And so this team has all of the pieces to really put things together. I wanted to leave us all on a positive note there. And everything's kind of coming together.
Indeed. Just to go back on some of the negative for one second.
Let's do it. Just never enough with the Raptors.
I know. And the Fred Pascal thing, like, I don't want to criticize Pascal's game yesterday, because obviously it's not fair. Like, if he doesn't go off the way he did in the third quarter, like, they don't win. But late in the game, he had a matchup that was juicy. He'd already hit a couple of shots over Derek White, and the shot rimmed out. Now, make or miss league, yada, yada, yada. Sometimes you just need your guys to hit the shots. And if Fred and Pascal are your guys, like your late game executors, and then also Fred, he missed like a wide open three.
That was a backbreaker.
You just need them to hit it, right? Like that's what it's coming down to, like a road situation, you know, in that second play-in game. If they do get there, they might need those guys to hit those shots. And I just hope that they do, because the story of this season has been a lack of execution, a lack of role acceptance, a lack of understanding how to, you know, win games. And we just watched the Celtics, and they beat the Raptors by just simply executing their game plan. They said, we're going to let these guys take shots. We're going to beat them with just our crisp offense, our fluid movements. Like the way that the Celtics generate shots around the rim by just moving off the ball is really impressive. That's like championship level kind of stuff. And they've been developing this since last season. And I look at the Raptors, I'm like, this is where you have to get to. That's where you have to get to. This is
where
you need Jaylen Brown, when he's just like cutting back door on Scottie. Scottie's like, where'd he go? Where'd he go? Like, this is what you need, right? This is what you need. They always have shooters in the corners. You need OG Anunoby to be able to hit those shots under duress and on tight closeouts. You need Gary Trent Jr. to do the exact same thing. You need Fred to do the exact same thing. You need to be able to space out the floor in the proper way so Pascal, Scottie can actually generate offense going downhill. And you need that through spacing. it's kind of simple in a way. I mean, I'm not a coach, obviously, but I think some of these things are just very valid. The crispness and the fluidity of their offense need a little bit of a shakeup.
Just to add to that, because I think you're entirely correct, it's also finishing your drives, which has been something that I find has been the most frustrating with this team. Because yes, it's a make or miss league, but sometimes it feels like the Raptors are playing for a call when they get in the paint. Fred VanVleet does it. Pascal Siakam does it. OG Anunoby does it, and oftentimes does not get the call. It goes the other way when it's OG Anunoby for whatever reason. And Scottie Barnes does it. And I think, you know, a large part of why the Raptors are in the 9 seed and not the 8 seed is that Atlanta Hawks game, which is a perfect example of this, where you miss a layup at the buzzer.
Yeah.
And end up losing that game that you had controlled the entire way.
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes down to, like, go up hard. Don't go with the soft. Like, you want Scotty is so big. And when he remembers that he's big, that's why I love him at the five, he is so incredibly dominant. You go up there for a dunk. You go in hard. You don't go in for the finger roll. You go in hard. And sometimes for them, like, you go in a little too hard, buddy. I think that, like, this team, in terms of, like, their finishing, seems to be a little suspect to me when you're bigger. You're often bigger than your matchup because this team is so oddly built. Go up hard. Someone who does it consistently, I think, has been OG Anunoby. He just gives us those reverse dunks all the time. Precious Achiuwa did it. He had a couple of dunks that just look good. Just go in hard. Get those two easy points. If you get hit, you'll shoot free throws, but do not play to get hit because you're in a situation where you lose to the Atlanta Hawks and now you're the 9 seed instead of the 8 seed.
It's so true. OG's been attacking closeouts really well, too. There's been a decisiveness to how he's doing it. And he seems like he knows the path to the basket before the ball even gets to him. And that's just like reps and understanding and knowing we're going to get the ball on the court. But against the Celtics, it was like, okay, but this is a bit harder against this team because the Celtics are a very good defensive team. Great rim protection, just a lot of activity.
The Celtics played great defense last night. I just thought the Raptors just executed offensively terribly. Like, to me, it was just like, okay, this is a team on the second night of a back-to-back that's like had to play for their lives and look tired and probably came into this game thinking it's an easy win because half of this roster is out tonight.
How the hell could the Raptors think that?
I don't know. Maybe, they were like, I saw Sam Hauser and they were like, hey, we should be able to do this. And spoiler alert, they were not.
The Celtics missed a lot of wide open threes. Like, and that was the game plan for the Raptors. Many. But I mean, they shot what, like 19%? The Raptors shot 16. I don't know what it was.
It's like 28%, I think, for the Celtics and 18% for the Raptors.
Yeah, so fourth quarter got a little bit different. But yeah, for a while, they were competing with the Raptors for a low three-point percentage. But the Raptors, obviously, they inevitably finish at 18% from three.
Yeah, the Celtics often do not win games when they shoot that poorly from three.
Yeah.
Except if you're going to shoot poorly, the Raptors can always beat you there. They can always shoot worse. That's kind of been the story of the season for Toronto.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's going to be the story of the play-in because it's one game variance. Whoever shoots better is probably going to be able to win it. Having said that, the Raptors have proven to be able to beat some of these teams that they could be going up against shooting poorly as long as, you know, they're executing everything else perfectly. And do we bet they can do that?
Two games in a row.
Oof.
Let's find out. Let's find out. That's all I got.
That is a perfect place to leave it. Let's find out. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Emmett, for joining me. And hopefully we have some good news this weekend. Bye, everybody.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.